The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
For today is delusion. And I'll just give a little bit of a context in terms of how this fits into the understanding around Buddhist practice and around our path leading to ease and peace in our lives. So the Buddha, in his exploration of his own mind, his own experience, in fact, his whole search for peace and ease began with this question of, what is this? Why do human beings suffer? Why do we all struggle in our lives so much? He looked out at the world and it's like, wow, there's so much suffering out there. People confused and angry and holding on to things, not letting things go. It's like so much suffering out there because of these habits that we have around wanting to keep things, wanting to push things away. And his whole question was, what is this suffering about? And is it inherent in our lives? Or is it possible to be free from struggle, from suffering, to just live in a space of peace? Is that possible? That was his question. And for all of us, he did this exploration. He had his search around this. And he found, through his own practice, his own exploration, and communicated to us through his teachings over the course of some 40 years, that there is a kind of experience in our lives, a painful experience of being impinged on the body, that is inevitable. We are going to experience illness, we're going to experience aging, we're going to experience the pain of life in a body. And yet what he discovered is that we do not have to have a mental distress around this pain. He also found that another area of our pain related to when we are happy, when things seem to be going our way, we have this view or idea that having things be a certain way in the world is what makes us happy. Having the things we like around us, having relationships we like, having pleasant foods, pleasant sights, that having and having perhaps also confirmation of our identities. For instance, this is another big area around what we search for happiness. We want people to see us. We want people to acknowledge us. We want people to like us, to respect us. And we think that having the conditions of the world and the conditions of other people is how we will be happy. Essentially, basically, giving over our possibility for happiness to something outside of us. Relying on things external to us for our happiness. And what he realized is, in that kind of relying, we're relying on other people's opinions. You know, how reliable is that? We're relying on the conditions of the world. And again, the conditions in the world are very unreliable as a place for happiness. Things change. People's opinions change. And so when we put our happiness or put our place for happiness out into the world, we are giving over that happiness to unreliability. And that is another place where we suffer, because when those unreliable things change, when conditions change, when people's opinions change, we figure we have to work really hard to get the conditions back the way they were, to convince these people that to have a certain opinion about us, to construct the world to be the way we'd like it to be. And we suffer when we lose the pleasant experiences, the good opinions of others. And we suffer in the feeling like we have to, oh, I've got to do something to get it back. And so this is another area of struggle, of suffering in our lives. This wanting to hold on, wanting to construct, wanting to keep things that we think are our source of happiness. And again, the Buddha discovered in his own process of exploring this question of suffering that there's a way to be happy that is not relying on things of the world. And he identified three key movements of mind that keep us stuck in this pattern of having, basically keeping our attention out in the world as a place for happiness. He identified three areas that are very, very habitually ingrained into us, all of us as human beings. And these are greed, basically wanting to have things, wanting to hold on to things, coming with that sense of, I have to have this in order to be happy. The second is aversion, wanting to get rid of things we don't like, wanting to push them away, again coming with this attitude, I have to get rid of this in order to be happy. And the third is delusion, confusion. Confusion about, in fact, the very place where happiness can be found. And this is one of the big areas of delusion in our lives, that we think we can find happiness by constructing the world to be a certain way. We think that is where happiness will be found, and that's a major area of delusion in our lives. And so the Buddha identified these three places, these three habits of mind. We'll call them habits of mind, these three habits of mind, the habit of greed, the habit of aversion, the habit of delusion. And there's so many different states of mind that come along with those. Along with greed, you can find pride, excitement, wanting, lust, avarice, along with actually, and even just the simple liking. Liking has a kind, subtle, very subtle kind of greed to it. Then on the other side, aversion, there's a lot of states that are associated with that. Often we think of these as afflictive emotions, irritation, annoyance, anger, rage, hostility, fear, hatred, not liking. And then with delusion, the emotions around delusion, some of the emotions around delusion are like boredom, confusion, unclarity, spacing out, not really an emotion, but a state of mind. But delusion actually comes not so much, the deeper kinds of delusion come not so much with an emotion, but with a view, a belief. And that's kind of the area, the terrain I'd like primarily to explore today. So this three-part exploration, the Buddha said, in his own freedom, in his own finding of peace, he said, peace is the absence of greed, the absence of aversion, the absence of delusion. He didn't define peace in terms of having anything. He defined it in terms of release, a freedom from these habits of mind. Now, this may be somewhat, it's very counterintuitive, actually. Our whole mode of being is accumulation to find happiness. And to begin to recognize the freedom and the ease and the peace that comes with not holding on, not pushing away, it really takes the trust to explore our experience in our own way, and explore our experience and begin to see what happens as, for instance, if you can sometime, you might explore watching a simple kind of greed, you know, the urge to go to get a cup of coffee at Starbucks or something, you know, or to have a piece of chocolate, just some simple urge that contains some desire in it. Watching that, if you watch it, you might see at some point, you know, there's a kind of an unsettled quality to the mind that's wanting. It inherently, the mind that wants inherently feels unsatisfied. It inherently feels something's off, that it needs something to be okay. So that's the mind when it's filled with that quality of wanting. And in getting what it wants, that feeling of wanting goes away. And so it gets a kind of a double hit of easefulness. It gets the hit of the having what it wants, and it gets the hit of the wanting going away. And that that double hit is very potent for us. It basically conditions us to think more of that moment. You know, I like that moment when I get what I want. But what we don't actually realize is that mostly what we like is that moment when the wanting goes away. And if you can hang out watching a wanting and see it go away, if you actually see the moment when it goes away, I've seen this some in exploring my mind more deeply on retreat. I see it occasionally in daily life, but on retreat it becomes much more clear that moment when wanting vanishes feels like the mind has been released from a vice grip. It's like, oh, I don't need that thing actually. Or I might think it might be pleasant to have that thing, but it's okay to not have it. That state, the mind relaxes. And there's a deeper sense of ease that comes from that moment than comes from having the thing that we want. And that takes some trust. That takes some kind of willingness to explore in our own minds this process of wanting, the process of aversion. And so the absence of greed, the absence of aversion, the absence of delusion. Now, delusion, I talked a couple weeks ago about greed and aversion, and so that's about all I'm going to say about greed and aversion right now. you know, we can talk for weeks on those topics too. The topic of delusion can be a little more challenging because in its very nature, the deluded mind has trouble seeing itself. So I'd like to just explore a little bit, to open the conversation about the ways delusion manifests in our lives, which I think will help you to begin to see it functioning in your minds, to begin to recognize, oh, this may be delusion happening. As soon as we can start to see delusion, it begins to lose its grip on us. There's so many different ways it manifests, and so this is probably the topic of this week, and not next week because I'm away next week, but the following week. We'll just explore this topic of delusion in a few parts. So there's a relationship. I will actually say a little more about greed and aversion in its relationship to delusion. Delusion can arise out of greed and aversion because one of the main ways that delusion operates is because we see things in the world from a perspective. And in seeing from a perspective, we tend to pick things out of the world that match that perspective and don't see things in the world that don't match that perspective. And so when we're seeing things through a filter of aversion, for instance, I've seen this in my own life, especially on retreat, finding my mind in a kind of a state of dislike of, you know, I was doing walking meditation, and it was a crowded room. It was downstairs in the meditation facility, and there was a lot of people. It was probably nighttime, or it was probably rainy or something, and so a lot of people were in that room. And I experience a lot of aversion in crowds, so there it was. Aversion was present. And I saw, with that aversion being present, that pretty much everywhere my mind landed, it didn't like it. You know, it saw somebody's shoes at the end of the path, and it was like, who put those shoes there? It's like, these are just shoes, you know. It's like, so the mind was operating with this filter, seeing things from the perspective of aversion. That's a form of delusion, because it's not seeing things clearly. It's not seeing things as they are. It's seeing through a filter. So greed and aversion being filters on the mind can give rise to that delusion. But delusion is actually more fundamental than greed and aversion. Delusion is actually the source from which greed and aversion spring. That I mentioned just a few moments ago, the belief that having things to be the way we want them to be is where happiness lies, is a form of delusion. And so the delusion that's inherent in greed is having this thing will make me happy. The greed itself is a quality of feeling pulled towards something pleasant, that wish to possess something that's pleasant. The delusion that's related to it is the belief that that pleasantness will be a source of happiness. Will be a kind of, I mean, it's really amazing how our minds work. I mean, we know in our minds, we know intellectually that having like a piece of chocolate isn't going to make us happy forever. You know, we know that. But when our mind is in the mode of wanting that chocolate, and I've seen this in my own mind, it's like, it thinks it's going to make me happy for a long time. I mean, it's that it's in that mode of that wanting. It believes that that chocolate is going to do it for me. So that's delusion. That's the delusive nature of greed. Having that thing will make me happy. Likewise with aversion, the delusive nature of aversion. Getting rid of that thing is what will make me happy. Now this again is putting our happiness out into things of the world. And so the exploration begins to be landing here in this mind and body. The letting go of greed and aversion in a moment begins to bring a sense of ease, of peace. So the very greed and aversion, that very movement of mind, is based ultimately in delusion. So I'd like to explore, probably over the course of the 2 weeks, three different forms. They're not really different forms of delusion, but three different ways to talk about delusion, I'll say. The first is kind of a different form. The first is that sense of disconnection, of unawareness, of spacing out, of boredom, of just disconnection from experience, where we're kind of unaware of what's happening, a not knowing of what's happening. That's a form of delusion. That's probably the most obvious form of delusion. The other two are subtler. The second being views about who we are, our relationship to the world, kind of views that are formed through our lives, identities that we take on, beliefs we have about the world, agendas in terms of the way we function in the world, those kinds of experiences, those kind of mental projects, again, they create a filter so that we're seeing things from our perspective and not seeing things clearly. So there's a lot of those kinds of delusions that are formed through the course of our lives. And that's primarily the area I'd like to explore today. The third kind is what I call more human delusion. They're delusions that we all share as human beings that seem to be very deeply rooted in our biology, in our evolution, in our evolution. They're deeply rooted in evolution. And yet, even being deeply rooted in evolution, our human mind is so flexible that it's not hardwired. These very deep patterns of delusion, of belief, you know, just you see like a child reaching out for something it wants to have, you know, that pattern around getting what I want will make me happy is very deeply wired in our system. But fortunately, it's not hardwired. So it is possible to see those delusions and become free of them. But this is why, because they're so deeply embedded in our history and the ways our cultures have been passed down to us in our biology, they're harder to release. They take a lot of clarity in the mind and a lot of witnessing of the patterns at work over and over again. We witness these patterns at work over and over again, the mind begins to understand they don't work very well, and that helps the mind to let go of them. So I'll call those more human delusions or core delusions. And that's what I think I'll talk about in a couple of weeks, so that there's time to explore, in conversation, the delusions that are constructed in our lives through our personalities, through the ways we work, through our agendas. So first, I'll talk a little bit about this, the basic kind of delusion, the lack of awareness, the disconnection. This is like when we're lost in thought. You know, when our minds wander into some kind of unreal world. You know, we wake up realizing we've been living in an illusion, basically. You know, I've seen this so many different ways, so many different times. At one point, I had a relationship with someone, and this was before I started to practice, but I woke up into a thought about something that person might do in the future. And I was angry at that person for what they might do in the future. You know, so this is the mind constructing a reality, believing that reality, and then reacting to that reality. You know, constructed this scenario of this person doing something that would be harmful or painful to me, and my getting angry about it. Other times I've seen this. That one was because it was before I started practicing. That one was, I saw it, but it still, at some level, I believed. Yeah, but they might do that. That person might do that. And so there was still that hook to the anger. It was close enough. My envisioning of what that person might do was close enough to things that person had done. It's like, yeah, that person's going to keep doing those things, kind of thing. So the anger just, you know, perpetuated itself. As I began practicing, I began to see, you know, this is years later, same relationship, having broken up with that person, having worked through a lot of the difficulty, a lot of the anger. This is a whole big, huge part of my practice. In fact, the whole reason I got started in the practice was to work with the anger around this particular relationship. But several years into the practice, the anger had really dissipated. In fact, I couldn't even be angry at this person when they came up in my mind. So there I was, walking down the street, and thoughts arose in my mind. And in those thoughts, I was back in relationship with that person. The mind had constructed the reality of being in relationship with that person. We were together for about 10 years, so there was a lot of history there. And the mind had gone back to where we'd lived together. We actually hadn't lived together, but where we had been spending a lot of time together. It had created that environment in my mind. And when I came out of that state, that thought bubble, that world, there was a lot of confusion. It's like, what? I'm not in relationship with that person anymore. But the mind had completely believed that relationship existed while it was lost in that thought. So that's delusion. That's delusion at work. That's the kind of delusion that becomes apparent when mindfulness returns. So much of our disconnection, our unawareness, fueled by lack of mindfulness. You know, when we are not mindful, when we're not aware, this form of delusion is present in some form or another. Then the second kind, the kind I want to spend a little more time on today, is this delusion that comes from beliefs, views that we hold about ourselves, that we hold about others, even agendas. You know, again, when this notion of filters I talked about a few minutes ago, when we're immersed in a view, when we're immersed in some perspective, even if we're mindful, even if we are aware, that perspective can filter what we take in. We'll see certain things, know certain things, hear certain things, not see, not hear, not know other things. This runs counter to our whole belief around how our minds work. You know, we think our senses are kind of accurate recorders of reality. But in actual fact, and we can begin to see this through our practice, through our meditation, when we have a view, it filters our reality. I just recently started reading Marcel Proust, In Search of Lost Time. Some of you may know that as In Remembrance of Things Past. It's amazing. He is so astute, perceptive observer of the mind and the world. It makes me think his mind naturally meditated to be able to see things. So here's a example. Here's a quote from him. Facts do not find their way into the world in which our beliefs reside. Facts do not find their way into the world in which our beliefs reside. They do not produce our beliefs. They do not destroy them. Facts may inflict on beliefs the most constant refutations without weakening them. Essentially, because we cannot take them in. When we're experiencing the world from a particular perspective, a particular view, it's hard to see evidence to the contrary for that view. Very hard to see evidence to the contrary. Sure, use the mic, please.
I hope I say this right. But I asked that you would address this issue today, and surely enough you are. caring for a 95-year-old mother who last week asked us to do something that is such a futile effort. And I'm not sure what happened, but every part of my body was absolutely drained of energy. But as you said, my delusion, trying to address her delusion, is causing me a great deal of confusion. And all she's asking us to do is resurrect some plants that are so old. There is no way we can do that. And I'm trying to put myself into some of your words and understand that this is must be my delusion. It's just, to me, an act of futility. And I don't understand the need to do that. Is there a better way to think of it, that it is tapping my energy?
So her delusion around, you know, something that you see, or I mean, there can be some objective truths in the world. You know, if these plants are dead, you know, they're not going to be able to be.
Her she sees the world the way she's always seen it.
And that, yes, so this is delusion, right?
And we're being asked now to create that for her, and there is no alternative.
Yeah, and so you know, for you, the in this case, it sounds like, you know, I'm not saying you know in that case, her delusion is looking out and seeing things aren't the way I want them to be. They can be recreated that way. And in terms of your relationship with her, perhaps the delusion there is a bit subtler, you know, that the delusion is, I have to convince her she's wrong. I mean, you may not be able to convince her she's wrong. That's like putting your happiness on her. I'll be okay if I can convince her not to ask me this question anymore.
The reason I'm here is because of this 4-year endeavor now to take care of her and facing and the forgiveness and the disharmony that was created by this individual. I no longer ask her to change.
Uh-huh.
But this was truly something that was cosmic in the draining of my energy, and I didn't know how to put that in perspective for happiness, which is what I heard last week. But it is absolutely delusion. I don't know how to do it without robbing myself of my delusion, I guess, that I can't fix it. But I would never ask her to. She's stubborn.
Uh-huh. So yeah, I mean, you have to completely acknowledge, I mean, you probably can't fix it. That's probably not delusion. The delusion is in trying to, I mean, you can't fix the plants, for instance, right? You can't fix her. So, you know, the being robbed of energy comes with some, the delusion is at a subtler level, it comes with some kind of feeling that it's not okay for you to hold one belief and her to hold another belief, perhaps. That it's not okay for those two beliefs to exist simultaneously. And
I think you hit it, and and perhaps it is my unwillingness to let go of my own delusion about her. Maybe. So it is more subtle. I get it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not only in you know, areas of identity. This is a big area. This is a big area around views. Our views of ourselves, our views of others, you know, that person is that way, and, you know, this person, they're always late, you know. And so one thing that might happen there, that person's always late. you know, you recognize when they are late, and it kind of chinks a little mark on the part where they're late, and it's like cements that belief. But when they're not late, you may not recognize that and put a little chink on the side. Well, sometimes they're not late. You know, it's like that gets dismissed. Another example from Proust, another quote from Proust. I loved this one. His language is a little, this is translation, but the language is a little old, but our social personality is a creation of the mind of others. Even the simple act that we call seeing a person we know is in part an intellectual one. I would actually say entirely an intellectual one. We fill the physical appearance of the individual we see with all the notions we have about him. And of that, and of the total picture that we form for ourselves, these notions certainly occupy the greater part. Even the simple act that we call seeing a person we know is in part an intellectual one. We fill the physical appearance of the individual we see with all the notions we have about him. And of the total picture that we form for ourselves of the person, these notions certainly occupy the greater part. This is how we go through the world. We see others through our opinions of them, not through them as they actually are. Others see us through their opinions of us. We feel this more obviously, you know, when somebody is saying, but you're always, it's like, well, wait, no, I'm not always. You know, it's like that we feel when people are putting us into boxes. We feel that, but we don't see that we do the same thing to others. This, again, is a form of delusion. We're seeing the world through an idea. This is kind of one of the, it touches in one of the core delusions that I'll talk more about later, that we see things through, not through reality. And this is actually partly the way our minds work. And you know, everything that we see, everything that we know is already a construction of our minds. Neuroscience knows this. We only know things through the filter of our senses and of our minds. And the delusion inherent, or the delusion not inherent, the delusion that gets laid with that is that we are seeing reality, but we are actually seeing a construct of our own minds. So that's, and so this is the area in which delusion just flows like, you know, like water into a broken boat. You know, it's like it just seeps in through this area of how we see the world. So a lot of these views about ourselves and others are created, you know, as we grow up. You know, one kind of view about myself, you know, I'm really interested when I go into a place where there's a speaker in the front of the room. I'm really interested in knowing what they have to say, and I'll sit right in the front of the room. That's a view that I've had about myself. And looking back over my life, I can see that from the time that I was very young, two things were going on with me physically. One, I was extremely short. I was about a foot shorter than everybody else in the class. And two, I had really bad eyes and didn't know it for a long time. And so in order to help me see the board in kindergarten, in first grade, the teacher always put me front and center. I was always in the front of the class. I got very comfortable there. You know, so forevermore, that's where I was comfortable when I went into a room. You know, that's so that this is another example. I created a view about myself based on, you know, basically conditions that had arisen in my life. Again, you know, we create these views out of our experiences in life. We create identities around being in certain roles and believe in those identities. Some of you may have a sense of this. You know, sometimes we spend time with one person in one role, maybe a parent, for example, or a sibling, And, you know, it's like the relationship there, we see that person through that relationship, we see ourselves through that relationship, and sometimes when we leave them and go to see somebody else, some of that habit of relating to that person can carry towards another person. Again, this is a, you know, this is a view or an identity that is situational, that gets spread out so that we are relating to others in a way that may not be appropriate. There's also views that are created. It's not so much a view, it's more delusion that comes when we have an agenda. And again, this is something that in neuropsychology and psychology is called selective attention. And it's a functional part of our brains, actually. You know, when we're doing an activity, doing a task, our minds have learned the information that's relevant for doing that task. Or in doing a new task, the mind focuses even more intensely, perhaps, on accomplishing that task, kind of screening in the information that's relevant for accomplishing that task and screening out other information. This happens all the time, this kind of thing. And it creates a kind of delusion for us. Now, I've told this story about the that I'm going to tell now many times, but it's a perfect example, so I forgive me those of you who've heard it many times. There was a study done, and the people who were in the study were asked to watch a video about people playing basketball. They were asked to watch the number of times people in the white shirt passed the basketball between each other. And so that was the task. That was the agenda that the students had, the subjects had for this experiment. And they were able to do that. Pretty much everybody in the study was able to correctly identify the number of times the basketball passed between people. A very few of the subjects also commented something like, "Is there like a gorilla, a person in a gorilla suit that walked through?" Very few kind of noticed something unusual. The vast majority of the people did not see. There had, in fact, been a guy in a gorilla suit walk through the middle of the basketball court, actually stop, you know, dance around a little bit, and then walk out. It was like completely clear and obvious that there had been a guy in a gorilla suit walking through this video. The vast majority of the people, first of all, did not see the gorilla. That's one piece of the delusion. That, you know, so that's the selective attention. That's how our minds work, actually. It pulls certain things in and not others. But the delusion actually went further than that. Because when people were shown the video again, a certain number of them said, "That can't be the same video that I watched, because I would have seen the gorilla." So again, you know, delusion at work. We believe our senses to be accurate recorders of reality. So this is kind of frightening in a way, you know, that this delusion of I would have seen the gorilla, that's got to be a different tape, a different recording of what we saw. That delusion is pretty potent. If we understand how selective attention works and can recognize, oh, I might not see everything, we're a little safer there, right? You know, it's like that level of delusion becomes clearer to us. It becomes, we then recognize, oh, well, maybe what I see isn't so trustable. Maybe there are things that happened that I did not see. That's a place where we can begin to unmask these delusions. begin to recognize our identities, begin to recognize beliefs, actually. Beliefs are a key way, like this one, you know, this person has to be a different tape. This is a belief. Beliefs are a key way that delusions work. We believe things, and then because of those beliefs, we take certain things in, not other things in. And so a really helpful thing for us to do in these ways, and we have beliefs about ourselves, you know, it's like belief that I'm capable of certain things, not capable of other things. And having those beliefs, if we acknowledge them as beliefs, it goes a long way to unmasking those delusions. So a simple practice around beliefs and around delusion is to just simply acknowledge. I mean, we don't have to tell ourselves not to believe something. We don't have to tell ourselves, you know, this is a wrong belief. But it's really helpful to acknowledge this is a belief. This is an area I think we, you know, we sometimes see. So for instance, you know, the belief around having what I want will make me happy. You know, we could tell ourselves that belief is completely off. And in the ultimate sense, it is completely off. I mean, in terms of the deepest kind of happiness that's possible, it does create some kind of happiness to have what we want. So from that perspective, the belief is valid. In terms of the kind of happiness we think it's going to provide us, it is not valid. So one way to explore this would be, you know, I think that what we tend to want to do is to say, oh, well, that belief is wrong. But our minds aren't quite ready to acknowledge that our beliefs are wrong. But they may be ready to acknowledge they are beliefs. There's a distinction between seeing a belief, not seeing a belief, and just assuming it's truth. And in seeing a belief and knowing this is a belief. There's a huge difference between those two. And there can be a lot of ease that comes, a lot of opening and relief, in fact, that comes by just acknowledging, oh, this is a belief. One person on a retreat recently was talking about a doubt in his practice and his ability to do the practice. And he said, I try to tell myself that it's not true, that I do have the ability to practice. He'd seen that he has the ability to practice, you know, that he's been practicing for a long time and very clearly has the skill to practice. But in the mode of the doubt, that was the world he was living in, and it was like there wasn't a way to transition. And so he tried telling himself, this doubt, this is not true. But in that space, his mind believed it was true. And so I suggested, you know, just acknowledge that it's a belief. You don't have to say it's not true. You don't have to say it's false. Just acknowledge it as a belief. It's like, now I can do that. And there, that created such a space around that tension and struggle. Just a simple acknowledgement. Oh, this is a belief. And when we acknowledge something as a belief, it helps our minds to recognize that maybe there are other perspectives out there. That maybe this isn't actually a representative of things as they are. It's a representative of this being and the perspectives that come from this being. So a question here.
Well,
yeah, why don't you use the mic?
A comment. It seems like if we do get something that gives us pleasure, then a counter to greed is gratitude, and then being aware that what did give us pleasure is entirely gratuitous and ephemeral,
yes.
And that then we just you know, accept it for what it is, and be a sense that in a sense the attitude of greed actually. Or possessiveness, the the possessiveness actually pollutes the pleasure that it does.
It actually does. Yes. Absolutely. You know, the pleasure of the having is diminished by the holding, the contraction, the fear, the thinking I need to have this. And so there is. You're right that sense of gratitude can help to counter that tendency to contract. The recognition, this is a gift from the world. You know, this is it's like it's an ephemeral, passing thing. So to remind ourselves of those truths can help to counter that delusion of greed. Yes. Other comments, other questions. Yeah.
You mentioned at the beginning to look at our urges, and I was thinking it seems for me it's also very beneficial to look at my habits, and I guess it's like my urges reveal my habits, and then in looking at the habits, maybe I could see more of the filters, the delusions.
Yes, habits are huge. The habits tend to get cemented through delusion. So, yes, I mean, there's a couple of key pieces around delusion. Sometimes it's not so easy to see delusion, right? I mean, of course it's not easy to see delusion, but that's why I'm talking about it, to help bring it up in your minds. And anytime there is any kind of struggle, any kind of suffering, any kind of dissatisfaction, some kind of delusion is at work. And so anytime, yes, you can look at your habits. That's a great way, because it's like, you know, we kind of get locked into our habits. And those habits also, you know, keep us from seeing other possibilities. Proust had a great thick quote on habits, too. He's a great source for these quotes. I didn't write that one down, though. So, you know, the habits can put us into a delusion of comfort, right? And so to acknowledge that and recognize that and to see. So seeing our habits, and also any time we are witnessing discomfort, some kind of delusion is operating. And so by studying discomfort, we are already studying suffering, delusion. We don't have to look for the delusion directly in a way. We can meet the discomfort and slowly over time, like the discomfort around the wanting, you know, that discomfort is rooted in delusion. But mostly, mostly what we might feel is the pull and the sense of the need, the want. And, you know, you can watch that. You don't have to intellectually say, well, where's the delusion here? You know, it can just add a layer of thought on top of it. But having heard, for instance, that in the greed there is the delusion that thing will make me happy, you might begin to actually see that too. So, just a couple of approaches to actually beginning to look at. Yeah.
And then is delusion synonymous with ignorance?
I talk about them those ways. There's two words that the Pali translates. One, moha, is usually translated or often translated as delusion. Avijja is usually translated as ignorance. And avijja means non-wisdom. But they're used kind of synonymously. Those two words are used synonymously. But there are two words in the Pali. And now we need to stop. I didn't have as much time for conversation, but I'm sure glad I didn't try to do the whole thing. So in a couple of weeks, we'll explore the kind of deeper layers of delusion, which touches back to this. They're not really that different. So we'll continue this conversation. Thank you for your attention.